Good morning.
We are pleased to have Todd with us today and also Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of next week. Todd's work is work of integrating and energizing, connecting. And you can see that by just noticing what he'll be doing over the next several days. Today, this morning, this first chapel address, which draws from the theme of his book. And then for the pseudoscience series, at 4 o'clock, the climate's changing, so why aren't we? On Monday, he'll be with Eastern Mennonite School for most of the day, and then back up here on campus. There's a local watershed meal at 6 p.m. You'll be hearing more about that. And then Tuesday at the seminary, and also the faculty Tuesday luncheon. In the evening on Tuesday, you'll get reminders by email, but check the web events calendar too, a coffee house dialogue, reporting from the front lines, the watershed discipleship movement. That's a place especially for Earth Keepers, SFI, Peace Fellowship, Why Serve, and other student organizations and students to come together and grapple with the ideas that Todd's unveiling for us. And then Wednesday, the final chapel and the TGIW. A lot of things happening. Menno Media describes Todd's visit here as author in residence. I never called it that. But they are excited because they have released through Herald Press this book. We're the first book tour engagement, right, of this magnitude at least. I'm excited about that, at least out of state. So Todd Winward is an author, educator, small-scale farmer, wilderness trip leader, and Mennonite minister for watershed discipleship, affiliated with Albuquerque Mennonite Church, and licensed as minister of watershed discipleship by Mountain States Mennonite Conference. He's been engaged in education reform and social reform movements for 20 years. He's spent more than 1,000 nights outdoors. He and his wife Peg founded a wilderness-based public charter school in 2001 and are now creating TILT, an incubator for intentional living in Taos, New Mexico. His 2015 book, Rewilding the Way, Break Free to Follow an Untamed God, was published, as I said, by Herald Press. The books are available after chapel today at the Science Series next week as well, and every day in the bookstore. You can find more of his writings and doings at taostilt.org and rewildingtheway.com. Looking forward to engaging with you not only today, but next week as well. Let's welcome Todd to the stage and to campus.
So thanks for having me today. I didn't grow up Mennonite, I don't know if you already knew that or not, but I became a Mennonite 20 years ago with Albuquerque Mennonite, and I just found it a compelling value system for today's world and for adult seekers. I wrote an article in the Mennonite National Magazine last year called 12 Reasons Why Mennonites Are Sexy, and I got a little bit in trouble with that title. But the idea was that there's an attractive, compelling package that Mennonites, if they live to their values, can share with the world. I was here last year and got to meet some of you briefly here at EMU when I was asked to be a keynote speaker for the Anabaptist Communicators Conference. And at that point, I challenged the question. I said, is it time for Anabaptists to go big? Because this quiet in the land piece is really important for practice, but the world needs us today. The world needs transformed Anabaptism today. And so I just want to couch my words in that. I thought I would go old school today. Does anyone know what this is? Some of you may have actually taught with one at some distant day. Some of us might have learned from these at some distant past day, but it's like an 8-track tape, I think. Let's see, do I need to turn this on, Matt?
Yeah. That button on the right, the big red one.
All right, grammar lesson. So, I am going to teach you the habits of an adult panda bear, its diet. What does it do? What does it eat? This is what a panda bear eats. What happens if I put a comma in there? It's suddenly panda most wanted. One comma, a world of difference. That's what has happened from the left side to the right side of the Bible with a few things. We call the left side of the Bible the Old Testament. And sometimes messages from there get translated in a different way into the New Testament and then into our own lives. So check this out. I'd like you to raise your hand if you can identify well where this come from. Just a show of hands. Who knows where this comes from? A little biblical literacy. Go ahead and shout out, anyone, if you're willing to. Where does this come from?
Isaiah.
Now, this actually comes from Mark. John the Baptist. This reference here refers to John the Baptist in the narrative in Mark right away. And this is pointing to a person, correct? You with me on that? How about this? See if I can. This is Isaiah. Do you see the difference? The first one is pointing to a man in the wilderness, and the voice, the focus is on the messenger, John the Baptist. This becomes a mandate for action. Isaiah, 700 years before Jesus, was saying, hey, there's a voice calling. In the wilderness, you make a way for the Lord. This is an instruction for transformation, as opposed to information about a messenger. So I would argue that this is indeed a sentence with punctuation that changes everything. Enough of that. The full text, in the wilderness prepare a way for the Lord, make straight in the desert a highway for our God. It's a mission, it's a prerequisite for ancient Judaism, prophetic witness, enter the wilderness and there prepare a way for the Lord. This is a desert thread, and it's a dominant thread that runs through all of the Old Testament and into the New. Looking back through the Bible, you'll see scores of people who separate from dominant culture to speak back prophetically to dominant culture. And I would argue that is our task today. And it's something that's a 4,000-year lineage within Judeo-Christianity that has been hidden and suppressed as we've become comfortably cocooned within empire. This idea of escaping from bondage runs throughout. Moses did it, obviously, in the earliest of days. Going to the far side of the desert where he met an untamed God in a burning bush. Then, of course, through Exodus narrative, Hebrews did that. Bereft of security and identity, Ruth did that. She left everything she knew and traveled through wild places to find Naomi and to partner with her. Inside the whale, Jonah definitely did it, whether he wanted to or not. Talking about a desert where you are not in control, and where you need to find enoughness, where God has put you. Confronting kings and colt and coin, Elijah did it repeatedly, finding his own identity again and again in wild spaces. Organizing a radical life change movement, John the Baptist, of course, did it, But then prior to exploding on the scene himself, Jesus did it in the famous 40-day passage. Some people don't know that Paul did it. Reeling from the Damascus Road, his own narrative is that he went 3 years into Arabia before he started his public ministry. That's not mentioned in Luke, but it is mentioned in Paul's own writings about his own life. So Paul did something in the wilds of Arabia for several years, resisting state-endorsed Christianity during the time of Constantine. These people called the Desert Mothers and Desert Fathers did it. They escaped an empire-based religion to find God in the wild and to reinvent themselves. Jesus, when he sends out for the Great Commissioning, he sends them out what? Two by two. And he says, take nothing for the journey. I believe that Jesus was doing a rewilding for his disciples. We often focus on the Great Commission of what those disciples did in their evangelization rather than realizing what an incredible rite of passage that was for the disciples themselves to walk out into the unknown and have to depend upon unknown community, unknown nature, unknown God, unknown situations. But they definitely left their iPads at home when they did that. So encountering one's life in the wilderness or in an undomesticated space, in an unfamiliar place, has been this repetition to the point that I would argue this could be a third sacrament. We look at Jesus' life and we look at the Last Supper and we have this thing called communion because we knew that he did it. We have another sacrament called baptism because we know that he did it and the church did it. Up for the first 300 years of Christianity, it's very likely that wilderness sojourn was a common prerequisite and maybe even a requirement to become part of what these call the followers of the way. The idea of not depending upon empire or civilization for those needs for food, security, identity. John himself was part of a movement. John, as you might remember, it says, was already in the wilderness. John was with hundreds, if not thousands, of people who somehow were feeding themselves, sheltering themselves away from empire. How did that happen? He was already eating what? Do you remember? Locusts, honey, wearing animal clothes. This guy was what they might call anarcho-primitivist today. This guy was a hunter-gatherer. This person was imitating back and finding the rest of his community also, finding enoughness on the land. So when the bureaucrats came out to see him and were wanting to check off their list, he says, "What did you come out here to see, you vipers?" So he was clearly showing that God's enoughness in the desert was a place, not for eternity, but for a while, to reboot and re-engage and rejuvenate the spirit of God in people. There's a fascinating archaeological discovery. In 1991, Dr. James Tabor found a place in the caverns outside of Suba, near Jerusalem, but not too near, that Dr. Tabor concluded was called the Cave of John the Baptist. And it was a complex of caves where water ritual vessels were found in pools of underground grottos with glyphs of John the Baptist, both walking with a staff and camel hair, and then also beheaded. So it was clear that there was sort of a cult or a ceremonial ground where John the Baptist was highlighted. And in the pools were ritual vessels purposely broken from 700 BC, which is the time of Isaiah. And Isaiah is the one who said, "In the wilderness, make a path for your God." So we have vessels from 700 BC, evidence of John the Baptist's images from 4th century AD. We're talking at least 1,100 years of some people using these pools in undomesticated space outside of Jerusalem in order to transform in the wilderness and to speak prophetically back to dominant culture. So we have at least 100 years. And then you look at the Desert Fathers and Mothers in 300 and 400 BC. We're talking about 1,500 years here of potential lineage of a wilderness training. Was this some formalized piece? I don't know. There were schools of Isaiah. There was definitely some kind of wilderness teaching tradition. Why is that so important to Judeo-Christianity? It's likely that it has always been necessary for empire-addicted people to remove themselves from empire for a while to speak back to empire in a transformative way, which of course is the Jesus way. So safe within our cradle of consumption, when we metaphorize this, when we pass by this and think we can be just have our souls saved by Jesus or by Christ without doing any of our own training, we miss the boat and we become impotent, which has been happening for 1,700 years. Christians meaning well, but not able to stand prophetically. The Anabaptist tradition has this deep countercultural piece where people are willing to suffer and willing to be outcast. And so we have some of that energy already in our tradition. But without that, we can't live in a way where violence does not have dominion over human interaction. We can't live in a way where money does not have dominion over nature's cycles. This kind of transformative path in the wilderness can only be led by people who have gone Cimarron. The Spanish term Cimarron means a Mustang that is broken free. Something that was tame, gone feral. Jim Corbett was a sanctuary leader in Tucson, Arizona, who coined that term for me. The idea of going Cimarron means someone who has grew up tamed, who then becomes wild. And I would argue that term is a lovely term for us to think about and to ask yourself, how dependent upon mama culture are you? How dependent upon the teat of technology or the continual supply of external surplus and entertainment are you? Look at your calendar, look at your pocketbook, look at your devices, look at where your focus lies, and you can ask yourself, how dependent am I? And it may be time for a wilderness sojourn. And that just means anywhere you can find undomesticated space. It may mean in your week taking apart and leaving alone your need to fix reality and instead just love reality as it is in a Sabbath sort of way. It may be taking an active hike and letting go of all the stuff behind and paying attention, maybe going barefoot across rocky crags and feeling what that feels like. It may be finding communion with other people in a very uncomfortable part of town that you never normally go. These kinds of finding wildness in our lives are at the heart of what I'd like to suggest. Moses himself is a good metaphor and leader for us in this. Will we, like Moses, heed the call? Moses, of course, defected out of his pretty comfy existence as Pharaoh's underling and found his true roots by defecting from empire and chasing on the land. Like us, he was unprepared and full of excuses. But at Mount Sinai, God offered him a new vision of possibility that included compassion and solidarity and liberation. But leading people into this possibility was not Moses' dream. It wasn't part of what he wanted to do. He had business as usual to take care of. But Moses passes on the opportunity when God says, "You are to be the leader of my people." I love what he says. "Please send someone else." It's not so polite. It's like he's declining a dance invitation. No, thank you. I'd rather not do that. But God responds basically saying, "You're the person I've been waiting for." Yahweh tells Moses, "I will teach you what to do." And I would close by just saying, this is the time where God has been waiting for us to step up and be transformative leaders. After stepping into the wild and finding our steps by our path by walking it. And we can trust that God will teach us what to do if only we open ourselves to that experience. Thank you for listening.